This is the lecture for Biochem 421 for November 20, 2009.
All right, so now we're talking. This is November 20, is that correct? Yeah, November 20. This is still now chapter 17. We're looking at metabolism. Theoretically, you should have that. I did upload it, so it should be around somewhere for you. And any rate, so it's all good. We're looking on figure 17.6 right now. 17.6 looks at an overview of what is the ultimate result of all the metabolism. And you can see here you take complicated molecules like proteins, polysaccharides, and lipids. And you can break them down into their building blocks. What are the building blocks of proteins? What are the building blocks of fats and lipids? Fatty acids and some backbone. Name two backbones. That's one. What's the other backbone? Sphingosine. Say sphingosine. Okay, what are the two backbones again? What happens if you add another if you add a fatty acid tail to sphingosine? What do you get? What do you call it? Ceramide. If you add some carbohydrates, you call that what? Gangliosides or cerebrosides, I suppose, would be another way. The side indicating sugar. All right. So if you break down a polysaccharide, what do you get typically? If you break down a polysaccharide, what's the only carbohydrate you're going to get? What was it? You want to say that with more confidence. If you break down a polysaccharide, the only monosaccharide you're going to get is... Okay, don't put a question mark at the end of it. I want you to say glucose. All right, say it. That as loud as you can get? Oh, man. Go. Anyway, all right. So, yes, glucose. Now, if you break down a disaccharide, you could get some other monosaccharides. If you break down, say, maltose, what two monosaccharides do you get? If you break down lactose, what two monosaccharides do you get? If you break down sucrose, what two monosaccharides do you get? Glucose, fructose. Which one of those that I just mentioned are non-reducing? Sucrose is the only what? Disaccharide that's not reducing. That is just a quick reduce. All right, so catabolism, you get ammonia, water, and carbon dioxide. What do plants do? What do plants do? And take this and go backwards. That's exactly correct. All right, we went through this and this. Heterotrophs, you need to know the various names and so on, types of tropes. ATP cycle in cells. they figured that you have about a tenth of a mole of ATP in your body. And based on the amount of energy throughput that you have in a given day, they figure that ATP is recycled, each individual molecule of ATP is recycled about 600 times or so in a day in your body. Each ATP is recycled about 600 times. All right. Okay. What way can you figure out what these pathways are? Well, the primary way is the metabolic inhibitors and also mutations. But the one of the other ways is radioactive substrates. So under here, say metabolic inhibitors, mutations, and then another bullet point under there, put in radioactive substrates or radioactive intermediates. All right, so you got those three things there. Now we'll go on. Redox and metabolism. Again, this is... there's no blanks here, so we can go ripping along. And so we're now redox and metabolism. NAD plus collects electrons released in catabolism. What is the vitamin that provides the foundation for NAD? What vitamin is it? Say niacin. Niacin is the vitamin. Nicotinamide. Niacin. All right. Now, catabolism is the oxidative. That means substrate lose reducing equivalents using hydride ions. Anabolism is reductive. Ooh, look at this. NADPH provides reducing power for electrons for anabolic processes. Energy transduction is NADH. Biosynthetic reductive power comes from what N form? NADPH. Where do we form the vast majority of NADPH? What pathway provides that for us? NADPH, what pathway? We asked that question last time we met. You want to say that nice and loud? Pentose phosphate pathway, that's correct. That's where we get the NADPH. Pentose phosphate pathway is also where we get the riboses for DNA and RNA. That's where we get the pentoses for DNA and RNA. All right. Here's comparison of reduction of carbon atoms and biomolecules. Okay, so you draw an arrow from CH2 down to carbon dioxide. Can you oxidize carbon any more than carbon dioxide? No. Not in ordinary oxygen reactions. So go from CH2, put an arrow from CH2 down to carbon dioxide and say animals. And then from carbon dioxide back to typically CH2 and the OH, CH2 and the OH, write in plants. Plants. From CH2 to carbon dioxide, you see you put that arrow in, you put in animals, is that correct? Yes. Also put in, from CH2 to carbon dioxide, put in fat, F-A-T, or lipid. And what I want you to do is draw a bracket over the alcohol and the carbonyl group. A little bracket right here. Bracket. Then point down the carbon dioxide. And from that bracket to the carbon dioxide, put down carbohydrate and protein. So from CH2 to carbon dioxide, put down lipid. From the alcohol and the carbonyl group, put down carbohydrate and protein. Now, so that means that the most reduced form of energy storage you have in your body is, of course, what? Fat or lipid. Okay. And the next most reduced is protein and carbohydrate. Can you tell me? Do you think that's absolutely true? Let's see, how many calories per gram do you get out of carbohydrate? How many calories per gram do you get out of carbohydrate? 4. Okay, what about proteins? 4. Okay, you have to remember this, okay? Write this down if this doesn't stick, if it isn't prominent in your brain. The number of calories per gram for carbohydrate and protein is what? 4. What is it for fat? 9. Why is that? Because fat is the most reduced form of carbon you can get, and therefore, when you oxidize it, you have the greatest opportunity to extract out energy from that. Okay? So that's the reason why. Now, what about going from carbon dioxide to fat? Where do you find that primarily? Obviously, if you're going backwards from carbon dioxide to fat, what in the world? Carbon dioxide. There is not a single piece of chalk here. Crazy. All right. Now, so I guess I'm going to have to say this. Anyway. When you get corn oil or soybean oil or olive oil or rapeseed oil, actually that's called what? What's another name for rapeseed? Rapeseed's the old term. What's the new term? Canola oil. Are you crushing the plant or are you crushing the seed? The seed. Now, why are you crushing the seed? That's where the fat is stored. Why do you think fat is stored in a seed? What? Energy storage also. I need a piece of chalk. There's no drawers here. I don't see any drawers. And there's no handles. All right. Get a piece of paper. Someone going to go get some for me. Draw a line like this. Okay? Draw a line. Call it dirt. Put a little seed right here underneath the dirt. Draw a little line up through the dirt till it gets to the sunlight. All right? Okay. Draw a line with indicating soil or ground. Put the seed underneath the ground. Draw a line up to... Oh, you found some. Thank you so much, Clarissa. I'm so grateful. Appreciate it. You're very kind. Oh, three pieces. Life is good. All right, here you go. We're going to be talking... So you got the seed here. This is called a cotyledon. Oh, no. Plant morphology. Oh, no. Why? Where in the world? So this is fat. Okay, there's fat here. That's carbon storage. Okay. What is that cotyledon made out of? Cotyledon is made out of cellulose. What's the building block of cellulose? Glucose. Glucose, the fundamental element in glucose is what? Carbon. Okay? So a seed can take fat and make it into glucose, which then gets made into cellulose, and which then gets made into that cotyledon. What did I just say? I said that seed can take what storage form of carbon? Fat. Convert it into what? Glucose. That can make then what? Cellulose, which then makes the cotyledon, which eventually pierces through the soil, and as soon as it hits sunlight, it can do what? What is it going to do? Photosynthesis. So, can you bury a seed too deep? Yes. Why? Because the seed could run out of carbohydrate, it could run out of fat, making the cotyledon before it gets to the sunlight, and it'll die. Okay? So the seed is basically a spaceship that the plant sends out into space, and it's got to carry everything it can with it. And so it uses fat, not because it necessarily needs the energy, although it does need that energy, but it uses it primarily as a storage form for carbon to make the glucose, to make the cellulose, to make the cotyledon, to pierce through the subsoil or soil surface to get the sunlight. That's why you crushed all the seeds to get the oil out. And why is it an oil, not a fat? What's the difference between an oil and a fat? Okay, what sense would it be harder to mobilize a solid at room temperature for a seed or a liquid at room temperature for a seed? What do you think would be harder to mobilize? Move around. A solid. That's why the fat, that's why the lipid in seeds is an oil, not a fat. Anyway, so that is this process that converts. This process that converts glucose from fat to glucose is called the glyoxylate cycle. Glyoxylate cycle. Glyoxylate cycle that converts fat into carbohydrate. Do you have a glyoxylate cycle in your body? Do you? Can you make carbohydrate from fat? No, you cannot make carbohydrate from fat. You have no mechanism to do it. No mammal does. Because you don't need to grow an arm made out of carbohydrate. Okay, this is interesting. This only shows you... you got this NAD, NADH, you got this complicated molecule with adenine, and you got the ribose, and you got your phosphate, and then you got your nicotinamide, niacin variety here. And the electrons are actually reduced at that very top level. Now, are you going to have to remember that? No. But I just need for you to be able to, I mean, that's where it occurs, is that those carbons of that niacin fragment right there. Here you go. Reduced fuel, you burn it up, you get an oxidized product, but you take that NADP and make it NADPH that's reduced now. You take that NADPH, the reductive biosynthetic reactions, oxidized precursors, reductive biosynthetic product. This is the essence of what NAD and NADPH does. Of course, this occurs. What is this right here? That catabolism. You know what pathway that is. What pathway is it? Oh, come on. We just said it at the beginning of the class. This is, circle this and say pentose phosphate pathway. Okay? So the reduced fuel in this case, what's the beginning material for the pentose phosphate pathway? Huh? Glucose-6-phosphate. All right? And the oxidized product is a ribose. Ribose. So you get glucose-6-phosphate, you get a ribose product out of here. You can say ribose right here where it says oxidized product and point that ribose to DNA RNA. And then NADPH then is used for biosynthetic reductive reactions. Right. You can see here, we're now going backwards a little bit, talking about how you can measure these different kinds of intermediates. I mean, how can you elucidate a pathway? We find an inhibitor of a particular enzyme. You can see the buildup of the products and the lack of the following buildup of the reactants and the lack of the products, and you then have an idea of what enzyme is being whacked. So you can use these inhibitors to determine some of the metabolic pathways. What's the food substances? What food substances form the basis of human nutrition? Protein, nitrogen, essential amino acids. Private Tim Hall, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to have to remember this myself, but PVT Tim Hall. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There is some discussion about whether you want to call... There's an argument about whether there's 7 essential amino acids or more... because some of the amino acids that people don't call essential have other amino acids as precursors, which are essential. So it's kind of an awkward thing. But these are the ones that if you're going to put them in a group that's easy to remember, it's this one, Private Tim Hall. P would be proline. I don't remember all these. I'll have to look them up. P is proline. V is valine. M is methionine. H is histidine. I think both tyrosine and tryptophan are both required essential. So, anyway, I'll come up and I'll tell you what those are next time we get together. All right, carbohydrates. Are there essential carbohydrates? No. If you're eating at all, you get enough of them. Lipids, there are essential lipids, but again, if you're eating any of them, if you're eating at all, you're getting enough to provide the necessities. But there are some water-soluble ones that don't do this. All right, let's take a look here. So compartmentalization of glycolysis is citric acid cycle and oxidative phosphorylation. Of course, that's where you... So where is glycolysis formed? Where is it formed? Cytoplasm. So point an arrow... Circle it and point it out here and say cytoplasm. What about citric acid cycle? Where is that formed? Matrix of mitochondria or interior of mitochondria. What about oxidative phosphorylation? Intermembrane of the mitochondria. Now we're going to come up with some other ones. Fatty acid oxidation. Write in fatty acid oxidation. That occurs in the interior of the mitochondria. Fatty acid oxidation. Interior of the mitochondria. Fatty acid synthesis. That occurs in the cytoplasm. Cytoplasm. Okay? I think those are the two I really care about most. Yeah, just those two. Fatty acid synthesis is in cytoplasm. Fatty acid oxidation occurs within the mitochondria. Okay? Tell people who are not here they need to make sure to listen to this before the quiz on Monday. All this is just wonderful pieces of information. All right. Now we're going to look at vitamins. Vitamins. We're going to look at that as a single kind of a thing. So you need to read through this chapter, of course. Many of them are coenzymes. Now, so what is a holoenzyme? What's an apoenzyme? Right, just the protein, not the necessary cofactors, right? Then you've got a coenzyme and you've got a cofactor. The cofactor is the more general form. The cofactor can mean both inorganic ions like magnesium, manganese, or cobalt, whereas the coenzyme typically is an organic-based cofactor. And so here we're talking about coenzymes. These are the complicated molecules typically known as vitamins. Vitamins. Okay? Vitamins and coenzymes, which are, they're basically, vitamins are pre-coenzymes. They're classified as water-soluble and fat-soluble. Name a fat-soluble vitamin. Fat-soluble vitamin. What is it? K. Vitamin A. Vitamin D. Vitamin E. Give me a K. Give me a D. Give me an E. Who's too awake this morning? Dr. Novak. Okay, name some water-soluble vitamins. C, obviously. All the Bs. And that's about it. Folic acid is water-soluble. Pantothenic acid is water-soluble. Actually, pantothenate. Yeah, it's water-soluble. At any rate, so can you take excess vitamin C without any particular harm? Why is that? You'll tinkle it out. Can you take excess vitamin A without harm? No. Have children died of excess vitamin A ingestion? Yes. Because of overzealous parents who think they're doing their children right by giving them excess vitamins. Excess water, excess fat-soluble vitamins are not excreted nearly as effectively. This is why Linus Pauling, who is an American who received two Nobel Prizes. What two Nobel Prizes did Linus Pauling get? Chemistry and peace for his anti-nuclear war work. He also, near the end of his life, became convinced that excess high levels of vitamin C would strengthen the immune system. So he would take grams of vitamin C during his old age. Unfortunately, I think he is still dead. So it didn't help that much. It turns out he just had very expensive urine. So I don't see any. The evidence contradicts his supposition. All right. The water-soluble coenzymes exhibit the most interesting chemistry. You know what that means? Water-soluble coenzymes exhibit the most interesting chemistry? You know what that really means? Water-soluble coenzymes exhibit the only chemistry we can really figure out. No one really knows how vitamin A really works even to this day, and they've been intensely studying it for years. No clue. Not at the mechanistic level. Okay? They need it. You have to have it. We know it's, of course, used in eye. They have that. They've got that mechanism pretty well figured out. But in terms of other vitamin A issues, like in liver function and so on, Okay, vitamin B1, thiamine, and thiamine pyrophosphate. Thiamine, a thiazole ring joined to a substitute pyridine by a methylene bridge. Don't worry about that kind of level of detail. Thiamine PPP, or thiamine pyrophosphate, is active form. I need for you to know it as TPP. TPP. When you say thiamine pyrophosphate, it's TPP. And it's involved in what typical metabolism area? What is it? Carbohydrate. It catalyzes decarboxylation of alpha keto acids and the formation and cleavage of alpha keto hydroxy ketones. What is the enzyme that converts pyruvate into acetyl CoA? Do you remember that from glycolysis and the citric acid cycle? Pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. What's the name of it? Pyruvate dehydrogenase. That's correct. Guess what is a part of its structure? TPP. So why don't you write that under there? Just humor me here. Decarboxylation of alpha keto acids is pyruvate an alpha keto carboxylic acid? What is the structure of pyruvate? I'm writing the structure of pyruvate on the board is what I'm doing. Is that an alpha-keto carboxylic acid? Is the lack of confidence that you don't know or are you just tired? Tired. You know that this is an alpha-keto carboxylic acid. Because this carbon is the what carbon? Alpha carbon. This carbon is what carbon? Beta. All right. Okay. There we go. Now then, thiamine, vitamin B1, gets made into thiamine pyrophosphate. This mechanism or reaction I don't care about. Yeast, pyruvate decarboxylase, transketolase, phosphoketolase. The mechanism is unimportant. I do want you to underline the pyruvate decarboxylase. Also, don't forget to write in pyruvate dehydrogenase, which is that mechanism. Acetolactate synthase, transketolase. So, underline pyruvate decarboxylase, underline transketolase. Those are the two I want you to know. Just those two. Okay? The mechanism here is irrelevant. All right, figure 17, 18. We're going to skip that. Write skip across there, please. This is irrelevant. Role of thiazolium nitrogen. Write skip, please. All right. Some vitamins contain adenine nucleotides. Adenine nucleotides. So if we go back here, just real quick. I really am just noticing, what am I care about vitamin B1 and thiamine? I need for you to know that it's what called, what's the three-letter abbreviation for it? TPP, and it's used for decarboxylation of what? Alpha-keto acids. And what are two enzymes I asked you to know use TPP? Actually, three. Pyruvate decarboxylase, transketolase, and also pyruvate dehydrogenase. Pyruvate dehydrogenase, which is part of the citric acid cycle. All right, we're going to skip that. All right, coenzyme A. Adenine nucleotides. So there's lots of adenine nucleotides riding around in biology, and we're going to take a look at a couple of these. Flavin, mononucleotides, and dinucleotides, pyridine, coenzyme A. Nicotinamide and nicotinamide coenzyme, nicotinic acid. These coenzymes are two electron carriers. Now, so niacin, which makes nicotinic acid, which makes nicotinamide, you need to know that these transfer only two electrons at a time. Nicotinamide, NAD, NADH, NADPH, they transfer only two electrons. Not one, not three, not one at a time, only two at a time. If you need two electrons at a time, the NAD is your chemical. If you need one electron at a time, the FAD family. The FAD family is what you need. All right. So NAD, NADPH is important with that. You do not need to memorize the structure of this. I did ask you to kind of know, recognize what was going on at the nicotinamide oxidized versus reduced. How can you tell the difference between the oxidized and reduced form? What's the difference? More hydrogens on the reduced form. Is that correct? I don't care about the pro-R, pro-S nonsense. That's for advanced. You'll never see that in medical school. Unless you do... Or dental school, you've, unless you and you won't see it much in graduate school unless you're doing this specifically. You do not need to memorize this. You need to know, of course, that the on the 2-hydroxy, however, is where the phosphate adds if you want to make NADPH. So, kind of generally circle the structure where it gets reduced and kind of give a glance down there at the sugar, the ribose, and put a phosphate on number 2 position and call that NADP. NADP is right there. Nicotide, okay. Hydroxy, don't, okay, you can just skip this part. Nicotinamide coenzymes, that detail, you can skip that. Next thing, figure 1720. The interesting thing here is what I emphasized prior. If you would like, just to remind yourself, underline the first 3.5 lines under figure 1720. NAD plus and NAD NA plus and NADP plus participate exclusively in what? 2-electron transfer reactions. Right? So if you want 2 electrons, what do you use? NAD variety. That's correct. Otherwise, this is irrelevant. Don't worry about that. Last notes on nicotinamide. Nicotinamide was first isolated in 1937. Structures of nicotinic, nicotinamide, nicotine. Avoid confusion of the names. Niacin for nicotinic acid was suggested. So niacin deals with nicotinic acid and nicotinamide. Nicotine, however, nicotine is completely different. Right? Nicotine is the highly addictive, psychoactive compound in tobacco leaves. Okay? Has nothing to do with niacin or nicotinamide or nicotinic acid. So nicotine is the evil, self-dosing, government-taxing, addictive substance. And some people claim that nicotine is the most addictive compound on the planet. It's easier for a heroin addict to get off heroin than it is for a nicotine addict to get off nicotine. Vitamin B12, riboflavin, and flavin coenzymes. All right, riboflavin makes FMN and FAD. So FMN is not a 2-nucleotide, FAD is not a dinucleotide, but they're traditional and they persist. So the names are misleading, but you're going to see them anyway. So look at this. Oh, my goodness. Let's see here. What do we got here? We got an AMP down here at the bottom. We got a ribitol here, and we got this aloxazine, or whatever it is. Now, this is, I'm going to give you, oddly enough, I'm probably going to give you this structure. At least what I want you to do is I'm going to give you the structure. I'm going to blank out the isoaloxazine, the ribitol, and the AMP, and I want you to be able to tag those with it. Tag them. Match them. Tag them. Probably matching. But at any rate. All right. Flavin mechanisms. Now, here you go. Flavin, which we're just talking about here, these are not exclusively 2-electron mechanisms. They're what? 1 or 2. Is that correct? All right. So flavins are 1 or 2-electron transfer agents. That's basically the only thing you need to know on that piece of paper right here. What I need for you to know here is, you see the colored regions right in here? If I gave you this entire structure, that 3-ring structure, I'd like for you to circle the region that contains, that's the oxidized reductive region of that molecule. That's it. I'm not going to ask you to memorize it. I just want you to be able to spot it. I might, ladies and gentlemen, switch this in terms of its stereochemistry. I might just flip it. Okay? Flip it. Just to be obnoxious. I might flip it and make you draw it again. I make you identify it. Or I might even do it flip it this way. So be careful. I want you to know it well enough that you can spot the mirror image imposters and still circle the correct one. It shouldn't be too hard, but anyway, that's okay. Pantothenic acid, ladies and gentlemen, coenzyme A. Pantothenic acid is not commonly known as vitamin B3, but pantothenic acid is typically known as vitamin pantothenic acid and is an important component of coenzyme A. Now, sometimes, have you ever seen coenzyme A called CoA? CoA? Yes, good. CoA. Have you ever seen it called CoASH? Why do they call it CoASH? What's the SH stand for? Yeah, that's the sulfide end. That's this thing right here. All right, so on pantothenic acid, on this coenzyme A, I'm liable to give you a diagram of coenzyme A, and I want you to tag beta-mercaptoethylamine, pantothenic acid, and ADP. All right? Probably ask you to do that. I want you to... you're going to see this so often. Figure 1724, I want you to kind of commit that idea to memory, and I'm going to probably ask you to regurgitate that particular three-figure item, right? This what's going on with that acetyl-CoA business, why that particular carbon right there is susceptible. You know that from organic chemistry, susceptible to nucleophilic attack. We see that a lot. A lot, a lot, a lot. And so you need to be aware of it. All right, so vitamin. Okay, let's review. Okay, what have we looked at so far? What have we looked at so far? We've looked at... what's this vitamin? Vitamin name is what? Thiamine. Okay. What's the vitamin name here? Niacin. All right. What's the vitamin here? Riboflavin. Riboflavin, also known as vitamin B what? B2. The B1 was thiamine. B1 was thiamine. B1 was thiamine. B2 is riboflavin. B3, oddly enough, what you seldom call B3, is pantothenic acid. You can see that right here, and you need to know that. Then you get vitamin B6, peroxidine and peroxidyl phosphate. I want to back up and I'll talk about pantothenic acid just a little bit. Pantothenic acid is primarily carbohydrate and protein metabolism. Pantothenic acid is primarily carbohydrate and protein metabolism. There's a little bit doing with the fat, but it's primarily, if you get acetyl-CoA, you're dealing with pantothenic acid. And you know how acetyl-CoA is in the, how crucial it is in the citric acid cycle. But one of the other interesting things is that it's one of the cheapest vitamins you can buy. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's easily isolated. So when you buy an expensive shampoo that's, of course, called Provitamin B, Pantene, or whatever that is called. What's it called? Pantene Pro-V. What vitamin have they put in that shampoo for you? Not vitamin A. Well, it may be in there, but they name it after pantothenic acid. Vitamin B3. Now then, that's kind of interesting because you're dealing with what substance? What's your hair made up of primarily? Protein, right? Keratin, whatever. By the way, is it living or dead? Dead. Okay. So if you want beautiful glowing hair, the best thing you can do is what? Eat right. Because the hair gets... you may put vitamins on it on the surface, but is that helpful? No, because it's already what? Dead. Got to get us nourished. The roots. Apparently, I killed my roots. I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, the thing I like doing is saying, putting in vitamins on your hair to make it grow nice is kind of like rubbing sugar on your stomach to get fat. Okay? All right. All that for that joke. All right. So, vitamin B6, peroxidine, catalyzes reactions involving amino acids. Vitamin B6, transaminations and decarboxylations. Underline that. Transaminations and decarboxylations, because when we get to metabolism, you're going to see this a lot. Now then, this peroxidine, peroxidyl phosphate, makes a shift base. What in the world is a shift base? An imine. Exactly. Oh, you guys know this so well. And so that looks like what? That's a shift base. And or an imine. All right. And don't worry about this tautomeric form of peroxidyl phosphate. You don't need to know the seven classes here. Mechanism. Do we know it? Nope, don't need to worry about the mechanism. So, let's back up and let me show you what you can skip. All right? Figure 1725, you can skip. Figure 1726, you can skip. The mechanism, peroxidyl phosphate mechanisms, you can skip. Okay? Figure 1727, you can skip. Vitamin B12, you cannot skip. Oh, man. So there's very little piece of information I need for you to know about peroxidyl phosphate. But we'll figure that out. Okay, now, vitamin B12 contains the metal cobalt. It's the only known cobalt carbon bond in nature is vitamin B12. The only known carbon cobalt bond is vitamin B12. Oh, that'd make a great multiple choice question. Which of the following vitamins contains the only cobalt carbon bond in nature? Yeah, you'd circle B12, or if it wasn't there, you'd circle none of the above. Turns out that in the human body, there's only two enzymes that require it. And in all of nature, there's no more than four enzymes that need it. Vitamin B12. Can you imagine that? Vitamin B12, four in nature. Now, only certain eukaryotic organisms make vitamin B12. Okay? Only certain ones do. We humans do not. Neither do other primates. I believe cattle make it. And I also believe yeast, certain types of yeast can make it. So if you're a true vegan that's not eating any animal products whatsoever, you need to get a little bit of yeast and put on some of your food so that you can get the microscopic amounts of vitamin B12 that you need. The primary cause of vitamin B12 deficiency in humans is as you get older, the intake mechanism for vitamin B12 begins to fail. And so old people get vitamin B12 deficiencies because they're not eating it. It's not that they're not eating it. They are eating vitamin B12, but it's not being absorbed through the digestive tract. So they have to take vitamin B12 shots. There's so little used in any given day that a single shot of vitamin B12 will last a human being typically a whole year. So it's not used much. The fancy name for vitamin B12 is cyanocobalamin. Dorothy Hodgkin determined the crystal structure in 1961. She won a Nobel Prize. Okay. Vitamin B12, intramolecular arrangements, reductions, methyl group transfers. Methyl group transfer especially is important, assisted by tetrahydrofolate. Now, tetrahydrofolate is a variation that you have in your body of folic acid, which is another vitamin. Tetrahydrofolate is another material that comes from a vitamin called folic acid. You need to know these arrangements right here. I need for you to memorize this structure right here. I'm kidding. You know, when people come to me and say, oh, doctor, no, I mean, how can you possibly believe in creation? That is just completely bogus. There is no God. Or if you're dyslexic, there is no dog. What is it? The dyslexic atheist? There is no dog? That's actually supposed to be a joke. But at any rate, and you need to go. But you look at that vitamin. You look at the complexity of that vitamin. You look at the intrinsic lack of need of it. It's not this thing is not universally required in everywhere. It's such a highly specific need, and yet there it is. This cannot have been made by accident, ladies and gentlemen. That's my postulate. Okay, thank you very much. We'll see you on Monday. Be prepared for a 10-question multiple choice quiz.